Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, we are in the last week of the regular season of college football. I don't know if I'm just getting old, but boy, did that go fast this year.
So, you know, you're right. First of all, hope everyone, you know, has a good holiday weekend and enjoys themselves. The first like 5 or 6 weeks of the season, it didn't feel so fast to me. Like it, you know, maybe it was up until the first week of the college football playoff ranking, maybe around that time. It didn't feel like it was racing. The last 5 weeks, it felt like we were in week seven, you know, a week ago. You were right. It has blazed to this, the penultimate sort of, you know, weekend of college football before everything's finalized. So, and you have your championship weekend. So let's talk about it. Let's get going, Jimmy. I'm fired up.
So am I, Andy, and here's what's fascinating. All the way from before the season even started, and I think you can remember this, I started doing my projections for the college football playoffs. I took a look at the Southeast Conference schedule, penciled in losses for everyone, and I had a situation, if everything went to chalk, and we know it's not going to happen where the favorite's going to win every game, there was a situation where it would be like seven teams with two losses or fewer. Thank goodness we have upsets. And we had plenty of those in the Southeast Conference, which kind of sorted things out. Who would have guessed that, you know, teams like Ole Miss, Alabama, you know, Texas A&M would be shooting themselves in the foot this past week.
LSU.
And change everything.
Yeah. LSU's gone down. I mean, the only chalk we know of this pretty much this season has been the Big Ten. The only chalk in college football this year has been the Big Ten, right? It's been Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State. Those were the three amigos at the beginning of the year. Maybe you had Ohio State ahead of Oregon. Maybe you had Oregon ahead of Ohio State. Penn State was generally third. But those three amigos were right there. And look who's standing here at the end. Those three amigos, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State.
And of course, Indiana has made their way in. And
correct.
I think we're surprised that it's Indiana. But I think what didn't surprise us that because of an 18-team conference where everyone plays nine games, somewhere in that schedule was going to be somebody who would take advantage of not having to play all the big teams. We looked at Iowa's schedule, said maybe it would be them. You know, I know it's a crazy thought, but Rutgers wasn't going to play any of the big guys.
Right.
Was it going to be them?
Was it Michigan? Was Michigan going to measure up? They didn't have a killer schedule, but they had a tougher schedule. Were they going to be, you know, still a championship caliber team, right? That was Michigan was in that mix too, but yeah, it was in Nebraska. Nebraska
yes,
was
yes
another no. one that was and in the end, it's Indiana that came out of the crapshoot and they rose to the top.
And Andy, we looked at Michigan was a top 10 team preseason.
Correct.
And you mentioned Nebraska. Great point to bring them up because remember when it was Nebraska, Indiana was a big game. And who was going to be the one who came out of that? And I think when Indiana crushed them, just crushed them, that changed the whole narrative. And we had to say, uh-oh, maybe Indiana's for real. Now, I know there's still folks who want to say, Andy, they're not for real. And the Ohio State game proved that. I don't think it proved anything. It showed that Ohio State is the better team than Indiana.
Correct. But, that was no going in.
Yeah, but as far as gobsmacking goes, Alabama lost just as badly to Oklahoma. Correct. And there are still people saying Alabama belongs in. They might be one of the best teams. No Big Ten in the, team in the world wants to play Alabama, which to me is just crazy. Alabama, don't lose to Vanderbilt. Don't lose to Oklahoma.
They did. The SEC, but they did. And look, the Big Ten's really, it's pretty clean. The College Football Playoff Committee has no problems. You have no problems with the Big Ten. They create absolutely no problems. The SEC is giving them headaches. The Big 12's giving the poor College Football Playoff Committee heartache. They're like, oh, gosh. So that's the two conferences that are really giving them problems. The Big Ten is absolutely no problem. They cleaned themselves out and took care of themselves. The SEC, because it's a better and deeper conference, has hurt themselves in their parity.
I'm going to argue that point a little bit, Andy, because the thought, and that's kind of the national narrative. The Southeast Conference is so good and so deep, they're just destroying each other.
It's true.
No. Let me explain to you why, Andy. And I'm going to go back to my initial preseason looking at the thing, looking at the season going forward. And if everybody just beats who they're supposed to, they would have seven teams with two losses or fewer. But when you talk about Alabama losing to Oklahoma and Vanderbilt, that is not them beating each other up. That is Alabama losing two games they have no business losing. It's the same thing, Andy, with Ole Miss losing to Kentucky and to LSU and to Florida. They had no business losing those games. It would have been comparable to Penn State losing to Minnesota or USC or Illinois. Game or even lesser games of that. I mean, Illinois is at least a top 25 team. Now, I believe the only team in the Southeast Conference that has that argument is Georgia, because Georgia's losses are Alabama and Ole Miss, and they also have wins over Texas, Tennessee, and Clemson. If you want to make that argument about Georgia, be my guest, it's legit. You want to make that argument for A&M, for Ole Miss, for Alabama, sorry, doesn't hold water.
So you're talking about expectations versus performance. And by expectation standard, you're saying the SEC isn't beating itself up. I'm saying the difference between the SEC and the Big Ten and why the SEC is better and deeper is they have multiple. You just listed six or seven of examples of where anything below a top three or four team shouldn't lose a game and gets beat by a team that they shouldn't lose to. That's happened continuously and consistently in the SEC because they're deeper and better. That hasn't happened once in the Big Ten, Jimmy. Not once in the Big Ten has a top-tier team lost to a team. The core difference between the argument you and I are making, the Big Ten has elite teams. The SEC does not. The SEC does not have an elite one or two teams. They have eight teams that are kind of all interchangeable.
But
that's
but
the
Andy,
difference.
Those teams, those eight teams at the top, don't play each other very often. They only play eight conference games.
I know.
And Andy. Are you going to say Kentucky, Vanderbilt, LSU are part of that, Auburn, that they're part of those top eight teams? No, they are not.
They Oklahoma, are not.
No, they right. are not. They are no better than the Minnesotas and Wisconsins and Illinois.
They are better, Jimmy. That's
the playoff. Vanderbilt's better than Minnesota? Yeah. Kentucky's better than Minnesota?
Absolutely. They're better
football teams. They are not.
Yes, they are. Top to bottom, yeah, game in and game out, they're better football teams.
If you want to give, you know, like the top six, seven teams in the SEC, versus the top seven in the Big Ten, I will give you that. But when you're starting to get to the dregs, like Kentucky, no. Like, yeah, no. Auburn, no. No, no. They are not. And not. I don't want to cherry pick games, but I'm going to, okay? You know, like Texas A&M goes into Auburn and gets beaten. A year ago, you know, Penn State went down to Auburn, and I'm not even sure it was as good a Penn State team. And Penn State dominated Auburn at Auburn on the road. That's the difference. There's when Oregon went to Wisconsin and struggled, they found a way to win. That's what Penn State did against Minnesota. They found a way to win. Alabama went to Vanderbilt and did not.
The only difference between Penn State and Ole Miss is Penn State found a way to win two games that maybe probably shouldn't have, and Ole Miss hasn't been able to do that. That's it, Jimmy.
Exactly. That's exactly it, Andy.
That's what I'm saying.
They found a way to win. Ole Miss did not.
That's what
Ole Miss didn't find a way to beat inferior opponents. You got to be punished for that, Andy. That's a third. It's not just, they're beating each other up. That's losing games. You have no right losing.
You're saying the bottom three teams in the Big Ten are the same as the bottom three teams in the SEC, Jimmy?
No. What I'm saying is the Big Ten top teams, Oregon, Ohio State, Penn State, and even Indiana, did not get beaten by inferior opponents.
Yeah.
Alabama, Ole Miss, Texas A&M, Alabama, they all got beaten by far inferior opponents.
And there's far more of them to face in the SEC than the Big Ten. There's far more of them. You have more, it's a more difficult schedule week to week in the SEC than the Big Ten. End of story.
And Andy, they only play eight conference games,
which makes things easier.
And that top eight, that top tier. Let me ask you about Texas. How many games has Texas played against elite teams or good teams? Even
one, maybe two. One. Clemson, maybe Clemson, right?
No, Texas, I am asking you about. Texas didn't play Clemson.
Well, they played Georgia. They played one other good team. Oklahoma.
Who?
Oklahoma, maybe.
Oklahoma. Five-loss Oklahoma?
I said maybe. But it's Georgia, and they got beat thoroughly. Yes,
they
I
got
know.
Boat raced.
Right.
That's all right, Andy, we'll pick this up when we come back after the break. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Andy, I'm Jim. We spent the first quarter debating about the SEC versus Big Ten. I, of course, was right and kicked Andy's butt in the debate, but let's move on. Andy, I gave you a homework assignment for today's show. We had the college football playoff rankings come out. I'm not sure I have many problems with it. I'm not saying I wouldn't have done anything at least a little bit differently, but overall, I don't have a problem with what the committee did. I'm going to give their rankings, then I'm going to allow you to do your rankings, all right? Let's start with the only undefeated team, Oregon, is at number one. Ohio State, number two, the only loss for them on the road at Oregon. Texas with an awful schedule with one loss. Penn State without the greatest schedule in the world with one loss. Number four, Notre Dame, fifth, with their god-awful loss to Northern Illinois. One loss Miami from the ACC is sixth. The two SEC teams, Georgia and Tennessee, each with two losses, seventh and eighth. SMU, number nine. People forget, they're in the ACC, Andy. Correct. Number 10 is Indiana. They dropped after losing to Ohio State. Boise State, number 11. Clemson, number 12. And then the three Southeast Conference teams with three losses, Alabama, Ole Miss. And people forget about South Carolina, a pretty good team, but they have three losses, Andy. And then Arizona is 16th. That is the playoff committee ranking. What is your ranking, and what did you have issues with the playoff committee?
So the Clemson, I had an issue with. I think they need to beat South Carolina this week to earn that spot. I'm mortified that there's two ACC teams in there, but the SEC hasn't left them any choice. SMU's not better than Alabama, South Carolina, or Ole Miss, but you know what? You can't lose three darn football games, right?
So exactly, Andy. And let me ask you a question, or let me stop you there, because this leads to that old most deserving versus best team. You know, how many losses? I have no doubt, and a lot of people bring up this argument, if Alabama were to play SMU on a neutral field, who would be favored?
Alabama.
Alabama right. would be. So at what point do we start counting their losses where it's like Alabama, you may be the best team, but you can't keep losing games.
They've all jumped the shark, Jimmy. The two was the number. You could be relevant and part of the conversation as a two-loss team. You're a three-loss team now. Jump the shark.
I agree with that, Andy. I think that's the valid point. So, okay, so you currently have – you think Clemson's ranked a bit high. I get it. But I think the point also that they're going to play South Carolina, that's going to be really interesting to roll that game.
That's a great game this week. All right, my ranking.
All right, keep going. Yes.
I'm Oregon and Ohio State 1 and 2. They're unlike the SEC. They have proven themselves to be elite. Ohio State's played a good schedule, and they still have to play Michigan, right? They've played Penn State. They've played Indiana. They've played Oregon. Nobody else in the Big Ten has played that schedule. So Oregon and Ohio State 1-2. Here's where I go different from the playoff committee.
Going rogue, Andy.
Number three is Notre Dame.
Okay.
Yes, I know they lost to Northern Illinois. That was like 8-9 weeks ago. And you can't discount it.
I'm not sure I understand where you're coming from, Andy, but here's my question. Do they have a quality win?
Maybe Louisville, they killed them. Maybe. Does Penn State have a quality win? Notre Dame and Penn State are very similar to me. I think Penn State has played a little better schedule, had tougher road games, but has had more high-pulse games for you fans out there, but USC, Minnesota.
I also think they have a much better loss than Notre Dame does, Notre Dame has a much worse loss.
Right.
I keep interrupting you, Andy. You got Notre Dame third. Keep going.
The football eye test says Notre Dame 3, Penn State 4.
Okay.
So Penn State 4. Texas 5. Right behind Texas and nipping on their heels, two-loss Georgia, who beat Texas. I almost ranked Georgia ahead of Texas. I swear to gosh, I did. 7 is Tennessee. 8 is Miami. 9 is Indiana. 10 is Boise State. 11 is SMU. And 12 is Alabama.
Ooh. Now, here's what you did differently. And Texas, Penn State, and Notre Dame in the playoff rankings are 3, 4, and 5. You also have them 3, 4, and 5, but shuffled the deck on them.
Yeah, I moved Notre Dame up front, kept Penn State in the middle, and moved Texas to the caboose.
I don't have a big problem with that. I think Texas had the benefit of starting higher, having a good season last year coming off that. I think that's the beneficial. But we're also going to find out more from Texas because they play Texas A&M, who I think they'll beat, and then they get Georgia in the Southeast Conference Championship game. And if they beat Georgia, I'll say, okay,
yeah.
The ranking is legitimate.
They get another bite of the Bulldog apple. Good luck with that. Anyway, go ahead. Yeah.
Georgia and Tennessee, I think the only difference there is you dropped Miami below those two.
Yeah, Miami.
The committee had Miami ahead of them. I don't think I have a problem with that because I am particularly bullish on Georgia because I think they're the one team who has the legitimate argument that their schedule, they played like five top teams.
Right.
I give them credit for that.
One thing I will say, Jimmy, I considered putting Georgia third. I really did. One loss Notre Dame, one loss Penn State, one loss Texas. Two loss Georgia. That's not a mile to me. I thought about putting Georgia third. I really did.
And again, I'll keep saying it, Andy, with the whole – I have an issue with the entire Southeast Conference argument. But if you make that same argument about Georgia specifically, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, it's who you play. It's who you lose to and how you lose. It's also who you play and who you beat. That all matters, right? Both of them. Both ends of the spectrum matter, and I'm talking about full body of work here. My rankings is based on a full body of work.
Well, Georgia, when you talk about those other teams, like Alabama, Ole Miss – ironically, when you ask it, I'll ask quality wins for those two teams. They each have one.
Right.
Ironically, it's Georgia. Okay. Georgia has three quality wins with Tennessee, Texas, and Clemson. And their two losses are against two pretty good teams in Alabama and Ole Miss. I've given you five big games that they've had. And Andy, they're 3-2 in those five games, and their two losses were on the road, which I think specifically this season has been significant. It's an issue. So
anyway,
I'll give you that. I think Georgia deserves that. Tennessee, I'm curious your feeling on Tennessee. And they have a big win over Alabama.
Love their defense. Not enamored. They're not a balanced football team. Their offense is sketchy and inconsistent, right? They have some weapons and talent. I know they're guided by a young quarterback. They're a volatile offense in terms of they can be just as good as they can be just as bad. Their defense is championship quality level. Their defense is legit. Their defense is hard to move the ball on. They're hard to score on. They're good up front. They create a lot of pressure on you, even in the run game with their front and their linebackers. They're a championship defense, but they're not balanced. I do believe every team in front of them, including Texas, has more football balance on both sides of the ball.
Okay, let's take a look at some upcoming games. I like your list, Andy. I don't have a problem with it. Candidly, I don't think it's terribly different than the committee, and I think a couple of these things will be sorted out.
They will.
Here's a couple questions for you, though. I think Texas will beat Texas A&M. If A&M wins, it's going to be even more chaos. But
I don't think there's a large gap between Texas and Texas A&M, I'll be honest with you. And the quarterback's banged up for Texas. I don't see – Texas hasn't shown me that they're a good enough quality football team to say, Texas is going to win that game. I don't think so. Texas is going to have to go out and play well to win that game. I think Texas A&M is going to show up.
Let's say Texas wins. Okay. How about Georgia-Texas conference championship game?
You don't want to play Georgia right now. End of story. I don't care who you are. I don't care who you are. You don't want to play Georgia right now because they figured it out. Whatever they were looking for and had to get straightened out and figure out, They found it, all of it. They are playing a football at a very high level right now. You just don't want to play Georgia right now. You don't.
I'll give you that. How about Oregon, Ohio State?
50-50, box of chocolates game. I do believe the best unit on the field in that game is Ohio State's defense. Is Oregon's offense good enough at a neutral site again to make that less relevant? They were in the first game, right? I think Ohio State's offense has gone in the other direction with all the injuries and the instability, and it's not the powerhouse that it was when they played the first time. So that's a box of chocolates game for me. Toss it in the air. You know, it's hard to beat a team twice. I'd lean a little bit towards Ohio State, maybe.
All right, final one. And that's this weekend, regular season game. We talked about it a little bit. South Carolina and Clemson.
Yeah. You know, Clemson doesn't pass the eye test for me. They've got some good elements, but it just doesn't seem like game in and game out, week to week, when I watch Clemson, it doesn't seem cohesive, right? South Carolina's on the move.
All right, Andy, that's going to be it for this segment. Coming up, Ask Andy. Stay tuned for that. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number 3.
Woo!
Which means it's time to ask Andy. We're going to take your questions. If you want to send in a question, Andy, real simple. Just download our app, Keystone Sports. Andy, first question is from Jim in Berwick.
Jim?
If Clemson beats South Carolina, do they deserve a playoff bid?
Does that put them in the ACC title game if everything else chalkholds?
No, not necessarily. It'll probably be Miami SMU.
Clemson would be a two-loss team. Oh, Jimmy and Berwick. Man, that's a tough question. I say no, but I think the committee will say yes.
I think so, too. All right, let's get to some other questions. Let's start with Steve in Huntington Valley. He says, Andy, my unsung hero for Minnesota game was Khalil Dinkins. His blocking has continued to improve game over game, and it showed on Saturday and contributed tremendously to our victory. Who has been your unsung hero so far this season? And who, in your opinion, should we keep watching for versus Maryland?
Really good question, Steve. So the first part is who should you be watching for against Maryland? That's the second part. The first part, overall, who has been
your unsung hero for the team? You want me to go first?
No, I've got my first one. I'm trying to decide on which side of the ball. I'm going with Nick Dawkins at center. Right?
Good pick.
That offensive line has been they had to mix and match again against Minnesota after what, a series when Anthony got hurt at right tackle and they had to turn to Rucci again. They've had to mix and match the guards and everything, you know, the center's the quarterback up front on the offensive line. Obviously, you know, he's making the calls. He's getting everybody on the same page. He's setting the coverages. He's setting the run blocking schemes when an adjustment's made, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's been moving parts around him. And A, he's been really good. And B, they have been really good. So I'd have to go with him.
That's a good call. Here was mine. I have Kobe King. I think on a defense that has some star power, but seems to have struggled tackling, he hasn't seemed to struggle tackling.
That's a really good call, too, because he's had to cover for Rojas. Rojas is an absolute train wreck discipline-wise as a offside linebacker with some freedom to make plays. He's an undisciplined nightmare as far as I'm concerned, and because he hasn't gotten any better at it. He still keeps running the wrong gaps, and he makes a couple splash plays a game. Fine. What about the other 8 plays in a 10-play set? I just don't think he's been that linebacker in terms of his overall play getting better from, you know, week to week. And I think that's a great call by you, because I think he's had to cover up some of that, and he's done a good job of it. That's a really good call, Jimmy.
Thank you. Tony Rojas, just rap when you tackle. Make the tackle. All right, let's go to Matt in Massachusetts, who says, Jim and Andy, happy Thanksgiving to you and the KSN crew. Well, thank you very much there, Matt. He says, will the Kyle McCord effect ripple into the future mindset of recruiting or the transfer portal? Will future 4- and 5-star players be willing to go to a lesser profile program? This could shake up the competitive landscape and the status quo.
Yes. Yeah, Matt, that's the answer is a yes, because particularly at the quarterback position, because 4- and 5-stars, all they want to do is play. They really do. They in the modern game today, what 4- and 5-stars, particularly at the quarterback position, they don't want to do what Bo's doing, Prabhul is doing at Penn State. He is the exception to the norm now. Bo Prabhul is the exception to the norm now, Jimmy. They want to play. They want to play yesterday. They want to play today. They want to play tomorrow. They just want to be the guy. And they all want to be the guy. So they're going to, the Kyle McCord effect, that's a good call on that one. Going to Syracuse from Ohio State. Yeah, I think it's going to be prevalent in college football. I do.
And I think, Andy, you're right. It's mostly about the quarterbacks. And you have the situation where Kyle McCord going from Ohio State to Syracuse, and it benefited him. But we're also seeing a lot of it going the other way.
Correct.
Where the big-time schools, they're bringing in a guy from a lower level. So you're getting people like Curtis Rourke, the Indiana quarterback, coming from a small school. And you're seeing that happening
Minnesota.
All over the place.
Bessemer came from New Hampshire, right? I'm pretty
or
sure.
Rhode Island?
Rhode Island or something like that, yeah. Will Howard, Kansas State to Ohio State. Another example, you know. I don't know, Gabriel, UCF to...
He was originally Oklahoma, wasn't he?
Oklahoma, UCF, and then Oregon, right? Yeah. Bo Nix, Auburn to Oregon. It's going to go both ways, yeah.
So it's like, yeah... peer-to-peer, you know, same level to same level. It's the situation where what's interesting is Will Howard, who went from Kansas State to Ohio State, was not highly recruited. And coming out of – he was a Pennsylvania kid, right?
Out of Downingtown, yeah. He was good. I saw him in person.
Well, there's high school good and there's collegiate good.
But he was good.
Then you're probably a better scout, Andy, than the actual scouts. Because he didn't get offers from the big schools, but ended up there. And interestingly enough, Kyle McCord, the really highly rated guy who went to high school in Pennsylvania, although he's from Jersey,
right?
He went from the very highly rated team like Ohio State to Syracuse. Let's stay down this quarterback path here, Andy.
Uh-oh.
Randy from Carlisle says, would Drew Aller benefit from another year in college? Do you think he would consider staying?
Good question, Randy. I got about 6 of those last weekend from Penn State friends of mine via text. The first question, would he benefit from another year of college? Maybe. Would he stay at Penn State? Maybe. I think he likes the offensive coordinator, but I don't think he develops there because I don't see the wide receiver position being a help for him. This is my personal opinion. I think he benefits from another year of college. I think he needs to transfer and go someplace where they have where the wide receiver position has the ability to show and showcase how much arm talent he really has. And I think he's still, I think he's also the kind of kid that might stay because of Andy Kotelnicki and his commitment to Penn State. And I know that is part of who he is. The football person in me says, I think he needs another year. Maybe. I'm not saying that convincingly. Maybe. And I think he would be better served transferring up.
Andy, could you imagine the angst of Penn State fans if he went home to Ohio?
Yeah, it makes sense to me, though. It would. Yeah, I know the Penn State fans. And I'm not sure he would do that because I know his dislike for the Ohio State University is quite real. But Andy's really done a good job with him, and he's done an outstanding job progressing. But good gracious, Jimmy, the wide receiver position is such a boat anchor for him, the quarterback.
Andy, first of all, yeah, I think if he were to stay another year, he's not transferring. It would be to stay at Penn State.
I disagree.
And I'm sorry?
I disagree.
Well, I didn't say he should.
Oh.
I'm saying that's if he were to stay, I think he will stay at Penn State, not go somewhere else. The second thing is, I do think he's the type of kid who isn't going to be just, I'm racing to play on Sunday.
Right.
And I do think he would benefit from it. And I think the other part to this is still, just like several kids from Ohio State who could have gone to the NFL, chose to stick around. Because at the very least, you may not be NFL money, but you're now making money in college.
Jordan's going to need a quarterback, Jimmy. I'm just saying.
I just think personality-wise, I think he's enjoying himself at Penn State. I think he likes being here. I've had people asking me this question, too, a lot recently. And I even had, a source kind of tell me that they wouldn't be surprised if he stuck around another year. That there's,
yeah, I wouldn't either.
Conversation's going on. All right, let's see. Let's go to
one more.
Mark in Sarasota, who says,
"Ooh, one of my favorite places in the United States."
Yeah, it's wonderful as we hit this cold weather. Anyway, Mark says, "Is it better to avoid the Big Ten Conference Championship game, or should the team welcome it?"
No.
And then your thoughts on Penn State versus Oregon.
Oh, I'd love to see that football game. I would love to see Penn State, Oregon. No, you want to play for a championship. You want Michigan to upset Ohio State this weekend and punch Penn State's ticket to play Oregon in the Big Ten championship game. You don't want to sit back and kind of just be comfortable where you are. You have a chance to win a conference championship. That matters. That's what you play the game for. If you're Penn State, you're going out. You're like, all right, you might even know the result, right? Because the game's at noon and you're playing Maryland at 3:30. Go out and take care of your business. And if Michigan happens to upset Ohio State, you're like, now we got twice as much to play for. We got a championship to go win. 100% think you want to play for a championship. Coaching staff, players, support staff, program-wise, you want it.
Tell me, Oregon, Penn State, how do you think that game would play out?
So, it becomes about Penn State's offensive line against Maryland's defensive front. Who wins that battle?
You mean Oregon's defensive
I mean front. Oregon's defensive front. Penn State's O-line against Oregon's defensive front. Fascinating matchup. Great football game. There's not a mile between the two clubs. I don't think there is, and I think it's a 50-50 game in my book. I think either team could win that football game. Neither one is a strong or heavy favorite. Not a chance.
It would be an interesting game. It really would. I do understand, and I've been the one, pushing for a home playoff game forever, Andy. But I would love also to see Penn State versus Oregon. All right, Andy, that's it for quarter number three. We've got one more quarter to go. We'll do that when we come back. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. It's quarter number four of our show. And Andy, we've talked a lot about the national picture. How about we talk about those Nittany Lions a little bit? I know we're getting set for the final game. It's a home game against Maryland, Saturday at 3:30. And Andy, before we get there, just want to get your take. Penn State's a heavy favorite against Maryland. We'll talk about them in a couple minutes.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get the final take from you. I don't want to re-up the whole Penn State-Minnesota game, but a couple interesting things as takeaways from that. I think the biggest one was James Franklin's decision to go with the fake punt from his own 34-yard line. Now, full disclosure, I'm watching the game in my Barca lounger, and I'm screaming, fake the punt. I really am. Before it happens, because I think you go for it, you go for the win. How surprised were you that they decided to fake the punt? And what does this say for James Franklin as far as that whole can't win the big game, gets too conservative?
So that's a mouthful of a question. With who I was watching the game with, when they trotted the punting unit out there, the words that immediately came out of my mouth is, there's no way an HE double toothpicks are kicking this football. They are not kicking this football. They're not. This is the time, right? Like, this is, and if this goes to the James Franklin, I don't think it's anything that he recognized. A, he's got a defense to back him up. Now, that's kind of already in field goal position. But there comes times when you're going to perform at another level where you have to risk the biscuit, right? Risk, no risk it, no biscuit. You got to risk the biscuit, and you got to play to win and be able to accept the consequences if you're not successful, right? And James really doesn't subscribe to that. That's why, generally speaking, on that fake punt, Minnesota had no expectation other than for Penn State to kick it, as they rightly should, because the previous 1,999 times on that scenario, the James Franklin team punted, right? Played field position, played the odds. He decided in this moment, in this game, with this team, finally, he was going to risk the biscuit and was willing to accept the consequence of it. Good for him. I hope you see more of that going forward. You're going to need a little bit more of that going forward as your talent level sort of moves and shakes a little bit on the horizon, but they just decided that we are going to have complete and total institutional control on the final outcome of this game is going to rest with us and not be left in the hands of them and us together. They completely took control. They went for it not once, not twice, but three times, Jimmy. And that means they had made a commitment. That's a complete commitment to holding institutional control, the outcome of that game in what was a heck of a football game, the very best Minnesota could offer, the absolute very best Minnesota could offer. James decided not to give them any say in that opportunity, because I'm with him on this. I'm 90% sure Minnesota would have found a way to win that football game if they would have had a say in it at the end. They didn't. Penn State left it in their hands. That's the biggest difference for me.
Andy, the one thing I'll add to this, and this may sound silly, but I also think going for it, and I don't know if this entered James Franklin's mind, but you give the ball to Minnesota there at the 35-yard line. Minnesota is practically pretty much in field goal position right away. But I believe Penn State had all three of their timeouts left.
They did.
They also have the two-minute timeout.
They did.
And Minnesota probably not wanting to risk not getting that go-ahead field goal. I suspect Minnesota would have gotten pretty conservative. You had the opportunity. I almost feel like if you're Penn State, you're almost better giving the ball. I know it sounds silly. Giving the ball to Minnesota there at the 35 rather than punting it away to them, because whatever Minnesota is going to do, it's going to happen right away. It's going to happen quickly. With your timeouts and the two-minute timeout, that's four stoppages you can get. You would get the ball back, Andy, with lots of time. So I think it was a good risk to take for Penn State. I think it was smart analytically, besides the idea that you're now playing to win and, you know, it's now in your hands and it's in your offense's hands.
I said to my buddy that I was watching the game with, I said, there's no difference between handing them the ball right here and handing them the ball at their own 20. There's no difference. It's the same momentum boost for them because they got the ball back. Where they get the ball back on the field is almost irrelevant. They just want the football. So whether you don't, whether that fake punt was unsuccessful or whether you punted it to them and they took over at their 20, I said, dude, that's irrelevant. It's the fact that they desperately need the football back to gain any momentum. The only way you break their spirit is by continuing to hold the football. And that's the way Penn State broke their spirit.
And in that, I do think, like I said, the only difference would be if Minnesota gets it back in advantageous position, whatever happens will happen quicker. All right, Andy, next question for you. Upcoming game. Notre Dame plays USC at USC. Does USC have a shot at this? And if Notre Dame handles them, will the committee put Notre Dame ahead of Penn State?
They might, but it would not make – no, because I don't think I don't think the committee would put them ahead of Penn State if they beat USC, because Penn State beat USC at USC as well. And they've already proven, the committee's already shown from the very beginning that they like Penn State and they like Penn State better than Notre Dame. Right? They've already kind of shown that. Do I think USC only shows up at home, right? Like they beat UCLA barely last week in the Rose Bowl. That's kind of like a home game because UCLA's home game, but they're just awful on the road. They're not great at home, but they play better at home. Notre Dame is a complete football team that is playing under an umbrella as good of two-way complementary football as pretty much anybody right now. There's not much difference between offense and defense. Neither one's carrying more water up the hill. That is the difficulty that USC will have to face, is there isn't really a weakness to kind of give them a little bit of an advantage, right? Like against Penn State, they were still in that slow start mode offensively. They weren't scoring touchdowns when the two played, remember? And that created the gap at halftime that created the crazy comeback and forced the game into overtime where Penn State won it. That's not how Notre Dame operates. They're not going to get much help from Notre Dame. And for USC to win that game, they're going to need help from Notre Dame. Notre Dame has to give USC help for USC to have a say in the outcome of that game, and I just don't see that happening.
Well, I suspect, Andy, if Notre Dame handles USC, you know, it's, I'm trying to think of a score like
14, you know, 20, 17 points, yeah.
Yes, 27-14, not a blowout, but they handle them. I wouldn't be surprised if they use that as their comparison point. Oh, Penn State needed overtime to beat USC. I think the unfortunate part about that is this is one where that quality of loss, Notre Dame, they cannot explain away that loss to Northern Illinois.
That's the difference for me, why they will keep Notre Dame below Penn State, Jimmy.
I think it's the reason they should. Whether they will, don't know.
That's the reason they will.
let me give you one more question on the national picture with this playoff. This is new. They didn't know what the different repercussions were. Do you think if they had a do-over, would still see that automatic high seeding for the conference champions? What I'm meaning is the Big 12, Group of Five, somebody, ACC, is going to get that number 3 or 4 seed in the bye. It's almost making that number 5 and 6 seed more attractive.
They're having heartache. That's where I say the Big 12's giving them heartache. I said that earlier in the show because they're like, man, I wish we didn't have to give them one of these top 4 seeds. But they do, and it was the only way to do it going into the 12, you know, the first year of the 12-team college football playoff. This was the only way to structure it and keep the regular season relevant. Jimmy, I think in the next 24 months, you're going to see change on that front. I think you're going to see, okay, you win your conference championship, you get in, but your seed isn't guaranteed like it is now. I still think you still have to be included in the 12, but you are not seeded 1 through 4. So I think that'll be an adjust fire, but I don't think they could have done it any other way, Jimmy. They could not have.
I agree, Andy. I think it'll change. I think the only difference will be we're going to end up with like 14 or 16 teams in the next iteration. Oh, all right, Andy, I'm giving this just like the minute and a half that it deserves. Penn State versus Maryland. I need your prediction. I need your bold prediction.
Yeah, I mean, we'll both be in Beaver Stadium Saturday, right? You'll be nice and warm. I'll be outside in the cold. The Terrapins, I mean, they've lost 4 in a row, Jimmy. They've lost 6 of their last 7. There's a coaching change looming. Their quarterback's banged up. They didn't even reach 250 yards last week against Iowa. You know, they have a single win in the Big Ten this year. One, and that was a crazy win against USC at home. USC, bad road team. Penn State 38, Maryland 10 is my prediction. My bold prediction. Are you ready for this, Jimmy?
Give it to me. Bolder the better, Andy.
Luke Reynolds has more touchdowns than Tyler Warren. That's silly, I know, right?
No. You know what? It's funny. He's gotten a lot of play after that fake punt. I think
he's playing a lot of tight end. They've been playing a lot of 12 personnel.
Yes, and he's getting play. I think they think highly of Luke Reynolds. I think he's got a chance to be the heir apparent. I just want to remind people, there's a guy by the name of Andrew Rappelier, who's been out hurt.
We'll come back
next year. So don't forget that name. Andy, I think this is going to be kind of a name the score kind of game, whatever James Franklin wants to put up. I think Maryland's going to keep the bus warm, keep it running. They can't get out of there fast enough and get home. So I don't think this is going to be a motivated Maryland team in any way. So that's it, Andy. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, Enjoy Cafe Tea pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.